You have more of a kind of an outside of the ring role now in TNA Impact Wrestling, but on the last UK tour, you did get back in the ring and throw a few punches and throw a few big boots and stuff like that. What are the possibilities of seeing that again in Manchester and London?
Well, I've learned in this business never to say never. You know, as time goes by, I live vicariously through the younger talent. And, you know, I was telling my wife, Jennifer, the other day, oh, my gosh, I can't believe I'm in the UK and I'm not ego talking and I'm not the main event, or I can't believe I'm not wrestling Kurt Angle, or I can't believe I'm not wrestling Jeff Hardy. But that was just the, you know, the young heart talking. And then I took a good look in the mirror and realized that, you know, the old man couldn't do it. So, I mean, I never say never. If there was a situation where my daughter Brooke might get in a bad spot, or, you know, something could go awry, you never know when I could roll in there and throw a punch or pick up a steel chair. So you can never say never.
Well, it's quite a significant day, actually, today, January 23rd. So 29 years ago, something very, very significant happened in the career of Hulk Hogan. Tell us what happened. Go back and relive those days.
Well, 29 years ago, it was more than just my career. It was the turning point for the wrestling business, basically, to shift gears and to fast forward into the entertainment direction. It started with the world title online in Madison Square Garden, Hulk Hogan versus the Iron Sheik, and it was the perfect storm. I mean, the Iron Sheik had just beaten the mainstay Bob Backlund, who'd been the champion for 5 years. America was at conflict with Iraq, as far as a political situation between the countries. Hulk Hogan was viewed as the American hero, and just all the elements led to the very, very perfect confrontation between good versus evil. But what came out of that was a different performance level. It wasn't just a wrestling match of good versus bad with good prevailing. It was the birth of entertainment in this business, because as I looked to the crowd, the look and the reaction to the crowd got just as much as acknowledgement as the move in the ring. And so, oh my gosh, as soon as I realized how important it was to interact with the crowd, I changed my whole mindset as far as my work in the ring. I realized that the crowd was actually living vicariously through me, and I better acknowledge them and not just stay focused on my opponents. So it was kind of like the beginning of the sports entertainment being born that day.
I watched the match itself not that long ago, and in fact, I watched the whole show. And one of the things to remark about the match with Sheik, it was a very short match, wasn't it? I think it was 2:53, something like that. Really quite a short match. Was it very important to kind of really stamp a mark in terms of, you know, Hulkamania has arrived, it has to be done quickly, vanquish this guy in such a big match, rather than perhaps a typical title match that might go 15, 20, 25 minutes, something like that?
I beg to differ on that. I think the match was a little bit longer than that. I mean, you could be right. I haven't looked at the time in quite a while, but it was a timing thing. It was pretty much up to myself and the Sheik to get it, what we call get it right. Time was not, we weren't selling time in that moment. We were selling a story, and we were selling an ending, and we were selling a theme. So basically, you know, on the way to the ring, Vince McMahon Sr. and Vince McMahon Jr. Were standing in the aisleway, and I asked them what they were thinking, because we were on the Madison Square Garden Network as a cable network, and I asked them what we were looking at as far as time. Do we need 5? Do we need 15? Do we need 20? And Vince Jr. said, time's not a problem, just get it right. I said, okay, well, I'll get it right then.
When you think back over your career, I'm sort of wondering about perhaps situations you were in, where programs you were in with other wrestlers or something, where perhaps it surprised you a little bit how successful it was. Because, I mean, you know, you've had big success throughout your career, don't get me wrong, but was there ever a sort of a program you were put into where you thought, oh, God, I'm not sure about this one. It's maybe not going to, you know, make as much money as perhaps you sort of thought it would, but then suddenly it went massive. I mean, one of the ones I'm thinking, and I don't know if it's the right example, perhaps the Paul Orndorff feud, for instance, that made mega money. And even perhaps I'm thinking of that Toronto show where perhaps they were a little bit, you know, maybe surprised that 70,000 people turned out in a ridiculously cold night?
Well, yeah, that night especially caught all of us off guard. I had never worked at the CNE Center, and I figured we'd have 6,000 or 7,000 people. When we got there and it was 70,000 plus, I went, oh my God. But that was a nice surprise. But, you know, I knew the chemistry was there with, you know, Paul Orndorff. It's just, it depended on him, on how good of a businessman he wanted to be and how big it could have gotten. And Paul, you know, Orndorff was a businessman. You know, he got a little stubborn at times, but basically he was a businessman, and we did consistent business. His work was just so incredibly good that, you know, it was good and bad. For me, I felt like I'd been in a car wreck when I get out of the ring working with him, but his stuff was so good and solid and so intense that he just knew how to turn that dial up and really make people believe and make people hate him, which made it easier for me as far as selling and making huge comebacks and making the building just rattle. So he was an ongoing opponent that I made a ton of money with. He was really good at what he did.
Was there ever a match, or maybe not a single match, but maybe a program or whatever, that you sort of, for whatever reason, never came off? You know, you never got to work an extended series of matches with this particular guy or something like that, where you thought, actually, we could do some really good business together, but it just never really happened.
Yeah, there was a situation, you know, because there were so many people to choose from. You know, there was the Macho Man, and there was, you know, Kamala, who did great business everywhere. There was Bob Orton Jr. There was Don Morocco. There were tons of guys. Earthquake. I can go on and on and on. The One Man Gang. There were several guys that, you know, there would be a feel in the ring, you know, or you could tell right away, you know, and that's how everything worked with me. I had to hear it and feel it, so I knew that, you know, the instinct thing. So I mean, I got in a situation with Jake the Snake where he had a kind of like a Piper's Pit. He had a, I don't know if the name of the show is like a snake pit or something. It was an interview show, and we did something there, which was the beginning of a major storyline with Jake and myself. And we went to Providence, and we worked one night, and that was pretty much it. It was like we were at a funeral, you know. And I just kind of realized that something wasn't clicking, and we kind of moved past it.
It was just a lack of chemistry, or was it just the crowd was split?
I don't know what it was. It just, there, you know, there was a Hulk Hogan, there was a Hulk Hogan style at the time that was real easy, you know, and there were several trains of thought from probably about 6 or 7 ways to go, you know, to make things perfect. And for some reason, Jake and I did not fit in any of those categories, and I tried my best, and he tried his best, but we just couldn't dance together. It wasn't right. And I mean, I just didn't want to run this thing out for 6 months or a year when there were so many other people like the Macho Man and everybody else that, you know, things were just red hot. So it just didn't work for whatever reason.
Well, certainly two guys who have got chemistry are Rockstar Spud and Marty Scurll. I guess, yes. Are we going to be seeing them against each other in these upcoming shows, or are we going to see them in separate matches, or what are we going
to
see?
To be honest with you, I don't know. I really don't know. Creatively, I didn't book these shows. So Bruce Pritchard, or maybe Jeremy Borash probably knows. I just keep throwing his name under the bus because he's sitting right here with me. He's my boy. But I would love to see those guys work in London, especially. But they would steal the show. That's all I got to say.
And I guess that's the aim of everybody, isn't it? To try and steal the show this Saturday night. You know, if anyone's on the fence about this, sort of thinking, oh, well, you know, maybe I will, you know, it's a bit snowy out there, but maybe, you know. If anyone's on the fence about what to expect from a night of TNA Impact Wrestling, I mean, what would your message be to them?
Well, I mean, it's going to be a great night of entertainment. You can bring the whole family. I mean, the kids will have a blast, and for some of the parents, they get to live vicariously through the young guys, or maybe me, because I will be there. But I would like everyone to come out, because we've got the hottest product in the wrestling business going today, and would love everybody to come and see it live and just not sit at home and watch it on TV. You know, these shows will be played during the month of February that we're taping, but there's nothing like being there live, so you have to come.